Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it's time for another toy department. We do this thing every week on this show. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky, by the way.
Hi.
We do this thing where we always say we're going to do a short podcast, and then it turns out to be an hour and 20 minutes.
If not to you, we at least say it to each other.
It's exactly. We were like, all right, I think we got the short one. But I have a ton of shit to do today. So
Yeah. I'm hoping wine.
Yeah, complain, I'm sure you do too. You just did a talk show already. You've been doing a thing today.
Yeah, my day's more or less over.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to sleep when we're done.
What's the hot topic on the pregame show right now?
Well, today it was a combination of sort of takeaways from a weekend in football and baseball playoffs.
We're going to talk a little bit of baseball, or I guess we can do it now. Are people still kind of more interested in football?
Football, yes,
than they are, yes, in baseball playoffs?
I think so. Yes.
It's just a bad sign for baseball, man. And you know, it's such a localized sport. And
yeah, I mean, ratings aren't so bad for the big playoff games, but regular season, it's a completely local sport.
Yeah, and national ratings do poorly. And I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm not basing this off any factual information, which is not my favorite spot to be in. But it seems to me that like playoff ratings are good, have been good the last couple of years, but that's been a big function of team matchups and narratives. They've gotten a lot of compelling major market teams and 7-game series and things like that. You know what I mean?
Okay, but I mean, that should work again this year.
It does seem like things are sort of
I mean, the nature of the sport plays in favor of that, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm very much of the camp. If you've been listening to this podcast long enough, you probably heard this spiel from me. That playoff baseball is highly, highly random. You know what I mean? And so just because there are a lot of teams this year that appear to be evenly matched, the entire National League seems to be pretty evenly matched. I don't know that it means we'll get competitive series, I guess was the end of that point. Sorry.
You either do or you don't get competitive series. I mean, yeah. I agree with you there. It's random. But I mean, in terms of big market teams being there, the sport plays in favor of that. And also in general, like playoff baseball is a little bit like playoff hockey in that every at bat and every run of most games is so valuable that it's usually worth watching.
Yeah. Although unlike playoff hockey, it takes 17 hours.
Yeah, it's too long, obviously.
And like all the pace of play stuff that, you know, gets talked about during the year
out
goes
the window.
Completely out the it's you
the
know
effing window.
Guys step out between every pitch and like think about stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
It's a great time for the philosophers of the game to ponder things while we sit around staring at nothing.
And I feel like that almost plays into the regionalism of it too. Like if it's your team and you are in fact hanging on every pitch, it is thrilling and agonizing, that like that kind of break between each thing. But like if I'm not emotionally invested, like I'm not really emotionally invested in the wild card games that are coming up.
Or I know, even in the Braves, it seems.
I have to say I am somewhat emotionally invested in the Braves. I have stepped up my Braves watching quite a bit over the last 2 months of the year when it appeared like, wow, this team is really for real. And they are
the extent of my White Sox watching right now is receiving a text from one Bob Fitzgerald that said, I never thought a team could win a division with Tyler Saladino on the roster.
Congrats.
And me saying, good point.
Yeah.
But I think Christian Yelich cancels him out.
Well, we're now at the point where the White Sox watching would be pretty difficult.
Oh, well, yes, but I just mean even the second half of the season. One can only handle so much minor league baseball played against major league teams.
Fair enough. But, you know, the spot that you're in is not that different from the spot my team was in.
No, that's the point. I'm not unhappy with my team's spot, broadly speaking. It's just they're pretty unwatchable.
Yeah,
right now.
I will say this for
next year or the year after, they'll be very good.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I will say this for the Braves, since I think most of America hasn't seen them very much. It's a very likable team this year. They got
the Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, they got the Rookie of the Year, and honestly. I mean, he's not seriously in the MVP discussion. He's not even the Brave most likely to be in the MVP discussion. But, man, when you consider that he didn't come up till July.
And how old is he?
And he's 20.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like,
yeah, it's pretty wild. And he is a joy to watch and a really good kid on top of that, if you care about those things. You know, Braves fans tend to care about that stuff sometimes. I say derisively. They
care more about something else, but we don't have to get into that.
Yeah, they're competitive, and fun, and it's lots of late comebacks, and it's one of those teams where they really like each other. You're not entirely sure how they're doing it all, and yeah, like I recommend the Braves experience for, you know, the 4 days that they're in against the Dodgers.
Every single thing you just said, including the recommendation, applies to the Oakland Athletics, and I expect them to be in this thing for a little bit. So enjoy.
So you are, because I do think it is interesting from a, you know, if we're talking about an interest and watchability standpoint, that two of the biggest name, you know, the marquee teams, in fact, I would say two of the top three in baseball are sitting in this wild card game. And
the Yankees and the Cubs.
And the Cubs, yeah, and it's possible that they could be one game and out on either one.
Yeah, I like the Cubs today, but I like the A's tomorrow.
Well, yeah, it's like how much can you like any, you know what I mean? Like it didn't even matter who the two teams are. It's one game. Yeah, you know, the Marlins could be in it and they've got a shot. It's one game.
Take it easy.
So, you know,
let's not get crazy, okay?
Look, the Colorado Rockies are a very good baseball team, and the A's are as well, obviously. So,
I think the A's are actually straight up better than the Yankees right now. I think their second half results show you as much.
They may be, and it's just, I don't know. It's just,
I think they're going to use five or six relievers to get through the game, and I think they're going to win it.
I do think this is the Yankees feel like one of those teams where you get, you know, you better cut the head off. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
I'm remembering the Twins-Yankees wildcard game from last season where the Twins went up like 4-0, and you're like, all right. And then the Yankees won 12-4.
The thing about the A's is they're that team all year long that you better cut the head off.
It is true.
They were like 77-1 when leading after 8 innings or something ridiculous like that. And they scored more and allowed fewer runs in the last 3 innings of the game than anyone in baseball, I believe. So they're just good, and they've been really clutch all year, particularly since like mid-June. Just everyone hitting in RBI situations, everyone contributing and pulling the rope in the same direction. It's just, that's why I say everything you said about the Braves, the enjoyability factor, the excitement of some of the guys, they all seem to like each other and be decent. Like, there's something going on with the Oakland Athletics, and I don't see why it would stop now.
Yeah, it is going to be exciting. So, do you think? So who are you thinking of? Winds up getting out of these things and wind up in the World Series at the end of this.
Well, I think the Astros are the best team in the AL. And I, despite the Red Sox incredible record, and the NL, man, I just don't know. It's such a mess. I really feel like anyone could. If the Cubs had won yesterday, I'd have said the Cubs. I guess I would say the Brewers if you made me pick, because I just, much like I'm saying with the A's, they've been clutch and come through in spots all year long. Why wouldn't they continue to? With the Dodgers, it's kind of like they've pretty much underperformed all year long. And I don't know why that would stop now all of a sudden.
Because that stuff happens.
Yeah. If you're going straight up talent, it's Cubs or Dodgers. If you're like trying to get a little, you know, trying to squeeze a little mojo in the door, I guess I'd go with the Brewers.
Yeah. Look, there is no National League outcome that surprises me, but if I got to make a pick, I'm just going to roll with the rematch of last year's World Series and go Astros Dodgers.
The Rockies seem like the least likely, but even that wouldn't shock you.
That wouldn't shock me in the slightest. The Rockies are legitimately good. So, if all these teams won like almost exactly the same amount of games, I think there was a point where a five-way tie was possible, right? So, yes. You know, it
should be a fun playoffs. I mean, fingers crossed.
Yeah, exactly. It does sort of seem like it's lining up at least for a lot of 5/7 game series, which would.
Why the heck not? All these I don't know. The Astros do to me look like a significantly better roster than most, but I don't know. It all feels pretty close.
The Red Sox won like 187 games. I'm exaggerating slightly.
I know. I trust them real good. A little less for whatever reason.
We haven't even mentioned the Cleveland Indians.
That would be truly the most shocking thing of all would be for them to win anything.
Cleveland Indians are not a bad baseball club, though. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you know what, though? Like, screw them.
You know? It would be very Yankees to come out of that wild card game and then somehow make it to the World Series. That would be a very Yankees thing to happen. So, there's all the outcomes are on the table. None would be surprising. I guess that's probably the best thing that baseball has going for it. I would say the worst thing is that it kind of feels like the season started today, right?
A little bit.
I saw somebody, I think it was Drew McGarry, tweeted like, "Hey, baseball's starting. Welcome back, baseball."
Right.
The other day, and it does feel like that a little bit. And
it feels like the last couple weeks of the regular season. And then now,
given that they've been playing for
100,000 days,
that is not a great sign. No. I feel like we used to say that about the NBA, and the NBA has half as many games as the
baseball. And we sort of still do say that about the NBA. And certainly we still say, the NBA doesn't really start until after Christmas, but I also think the intrigue and drama of the NBA has become so year-round and so ubiquitous that it doesn't matter as much anymore that people don't worry about the games until after Christmas.
Yeah, it's sort of, look, we know that most of the teams themselves don't really care about these games that much in the NBA, and yet...
I don't think that's accurate. But
because the storylines, well, look, there we have a lot of teams punting on a lot of regular season games. We can at least say that as an objective point of fact, right?
A few teams punting on some games is what I would say, but,
whatever. Fair enough. I mean, the Hawks are punting on all 82, don't you think?
I guess, but
and there's
a
fair amount of teams
exactly
in that
punting.
Boat.
That's sound strategy. It's rebuilding.
Yeah. Look, punting can be sound strategy, no? Ask the Colts.
I guess, but like, well played, but I just mean like when you say punting, it sounds like benching guys or not particularly caring about the outcome of a given game.
I think the Atlanta Hawks do not particularly care about the outcome of all 82 games.
I disagree. They are structurally, from a management perspective, trying to lose as many of those games as possible, and they are actively, from a player and coach standpoint, doing their best.
So you're saying they care about the outcome, but they want their caring is that they want to lose.
I'm saying it's different perspectives between management and coaching, management and then coaching and players. When you say punting, I picture the Spurs sending their best three players home on the plane. Or the Warriors benching guys.
I don't know.
Or
I think that's essentially. I think the Hawks sent anybody who was any good on a plane to another team in the offseason. And the difference, we've now gone way, way deeper to the Atlanta Hawks than we ever should on this podcast. But the difference between the Hawks of this year and last year is that last year they had a coach who was still trying to win basketball games, and I don't think they have that this year. I think everybody's on the same page. So
I don't agree. The coach is actually gets a lot of positive
I'm not saying he's a bad coach. I think they just understand we're here and we're tanking. And it's not playing for this year. You know what I mean?
I think I just dispute your characterization of what tanking is.
Okay. All right. Hey, like, I'm pro tanking. I trust the process. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying,
but you're
the regular season doesn't matter
to
a lot of teams in the NBA from a cynical standpoint. And yet, it's still fun and exciting to follow. I'm not even down on the NBA regular season.
I know you're not, but I just think you're being overly cynical about tanking.
All right, maybe. I guess, for what it's worth. All right, should we jump into the worlds of entertainment?
Yes.
Again, also a bad sign for baseball that we've
got distracted by the Hawks.
Yeah, we segued it to the Atlanta Hawks. It was more interesting to talk about.
Yep.
Oh, man. All right, you know what? Since we're sort of on this topic of the modern world, and the way things are changing, it seems like a sort of natural segue into the homework assignment on network television. I didn't have a specific objective when I thought of this. I just thought it would be interesting to try to find something to watch on network TV. That was it. No more, no less. It wasn't a specific outcome in mind. I can't believe how hard this was, like, for me, like, to find anything even, like, worth, like, bringing to you and saying, all right, let's try to watch this. And I have two choices for you for mine, and I don't feel good about either one. Did you have a similar experience?
Identical. I have three or four choices. My first choice, I tried to give a couple of them a 5 or 10 minute try just to be like, can I reasonably subject the both of us to it?
Gotcha. I didn't watch anything. I just read about
stuff. I understand.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, and I told you I had already done this with a show a couple weeks ago with Rel.
Oh, right.
And I have to,
sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. I was just agreeing you did do that.
Yeah. So... man, this is a brutal process. There are so many shows, and so few of them look to have any redeeming qualities. I'm interested to see if any of our choices overlap.
I am too. I just, and before we get to that, I just want, it's like, I had
this
thought.
Did I say three or four? I think I have four.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, I'm going to guess they're going to overlap then. I just wondered aloud while I was doing this. I'm like, why are we still doing network television? Like, what? They are so out of ideas. And you know, if you're looking at one of these like TV previews that has the network stuff jumbled in with the streaming and cable and whatever,
yeah,
like the offerings are just so much better. Just on a, and I'm not even talking about actually watching. You're just talking just
like
on a premise.
Line.
You know
not
what I
even,
mean?
Not even a summary. Just a log line.
Yeah.
You can throw out 80% of the network stuff on the log line. It's terrible.
It just seems so obvious that network TV now is for people who are not trying. And the, you know what I mean? Like,
well,
in terms
for,
of TV, like people who
people,
are not
frankly.
Thinking about it, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or old people who were just sort of set in their habits.
Like, if your understanding of media technology stopped with the DVR, that's who's still watching network television.
Yeah. Well, doesn't
like
it,
if you couldn't handle a Roku, you're still watching network television.
Doesn't it, like, as two people who work in free mass media, you know, over-the-air broadcast media,
yeah,
like, doesn't it kind of give you chills? Is it like, is my medium headed down this path? I guess many people would argue that we're already there, right? In terms of the quality of product that we offer.
Better or worse, right or wrong, I feel like my medium is a little different just because there's sort of this weird place for talk radio that even if the medium adjusts a little bit, it's a product that is kind of particular.
Yeah. I mean, look, I guess the difference in talk radio, right, is that you have podcasts that can – that do more niche conversations that you know on broadcast you're worried about audience and who's interested in topics,
right?
And sort of limits you to topics. That's sort of the equivalent, and that's probably a more manageable situation than for me, but also, of like, hey, I have a, there's a vast music universe full of choices, and a very small number of those amass the aggregate number of people to work on broadcast, and not a lot of those choices are artistically sound.
Yeah, and also for me, I do just feel like, especially for local sports talk, that's just a need that is not going anywhere. Like, even if it becomes largely a podcast market, like, the market of I want to hear what people are saying about my sports teams today is pretty thriving.
Yeah. Although, I mean, look, I listen to two Braves podcasts.
But like I said, like, you're not probably our target audience, but people who drive to and from work and want to know the local sports scene, but maybe aren't heavily on top of it via Twitter, like, that's who we're talking to.
I'm a bad example, too, because I've never root for the teams in the city that I live in. So,
right.
So I'm not interested in generally the local conversation.
But you do listen to, like, the Tony Kornheiser podcast, which is a national sports talk show, essentially.
Yes and no. It's actually it's weird. It's a national sports talk show with a DC focus, kind of.
Yeah.
Although some of that has gone away. But yeah, they still talk a lot about the Redskins and the Nets and whatever, and I just like it because it's entertaining. But yeah, mostly I listen to national podcasts. I think it's sort of the, you know, in terms of my sports listening, that's the national conversation now. All right, so we've gone very far afield. Let's talk about the shows.
Network shows, What'd you pick? Since you have fewer choices, why don't you go first?
All right, so I have one, which is a comedy. On Fox.
Okay.
Are we still in the running here?
We could be.
It's called The Cool Kids.
Yeah, that is one of mine.
All right. And that is a jumping off on the Golden Girls kind of premise of four seniors, including Vicki Lawrence and David Alan Grier. It is from Charlie Day, created this show, and it's kind of supposed to be It's Always Sunny for old people, which is why I thought you might also be interested in it.
Correct. Charlie Day plus Dag. I'm a big Dag fan. I'll give that a shot.
So, yeah, I don't have super high hopes, but that is that seemed like the best of the lot on the comedy side.
Yeah, I was going to say, from a comedy perspective, I'm okay. Maybe I don't have high hopes, but I have higher hopes than pretty much anything else looked.
Yeah.
Me.
The other is, and I don't know that show has actually aired yet.
I don't believe it has.
I think generally Fox shows start
this week.
Fox shows usually start after baseball, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, so then we wouldn't be able to do that this week.
But we should look that up.
No,
I don't know the premiere.
It did premiere.
Oh, it did?
On Friday.
Oh, it's on Friday night. Oh, great. I mean,
care. That's why you have a DVR.
Yeah, I'm
like
just
I
saying,
said.
Like, no one's, you know, that means that Fox doesn't have real high hopes for it, I guess would be what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the other one I had.
It also has Martin Mole, by the way. I mean, it looks good.
Yeah. There's some potential there.
Yeah.
The other one is a show that I've heard at least a few people talk about already. It has aired. So I don't know if we watch the premiere on demand, if we just watch next week's episode.
No, I mean, if we're doing a new show, we watch the premiere. Probably we should watch the first two, to be fair.
We should. It's a supernaturally type show in the Lost tradition on NBC. And it's called
also on my list.
Called Manifest.
Yep.
All right. You know, I liked Lost, so I'll try to check that out. And I think that is the decision-making process that got this show on the air. Kind of sounds like Lost. Yeah. People like that. Let's try this.
I'm convinced that's precisely what happened.
Yeah.
But again, so many of these shows that did get on the air are dismissible by the log line, that a log line that's like, it's a new version of a show you liked, is pretty good by comparison.
It is. the amount of, and I've already ranted about this, but like just the This Is Us clones that are popping up on the air this year, like it just feels like here's network television, like let's give them applesauce.
The only thing worse than that,
mac and cheese, here it comes.
The only thing worse than that is either reboots or outright resumptions of shows that were popular 40 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, those, like, those are bad.
I'm not watching Murphy Brown now. Get out of here.
That one to me is insane. And it's no shade to the original run of Murphy Brown. Like,
I would be good?
I have no problem with that. We just don't need this.
No, you know what we might kind of need? A new show with Candace Bergen as the lead.
Yeah. Like,
that might be interesting. Pitch me a totally new show where Candace Bergen is. I have no problem putting her back on TV. She's great. But why do we need more Murphy? How many episodes of Murphy Brown do you think there were?
I don't know. I'd say that made 100.
Season 11, to give you an idea.
Oh, Jesus. Really? Season 11? So 200 is what you're saying. I feel like that was a show.
248 episodes. We don't need more.
And it's like, I know this isn't a new show this year, but like Magnum P.I. You know, like
that is a new show this year.
Oh, it is? It is a new show this year? I take it back.
That was one I considered. I watched 10 minutes of it, and it was so bad.
It's like, you know what made Magnum P.I. the original, like, great? It wasn't the premise.
No.
You know what I mean? Right. It was like you had a super duper charismatic lead that everybody liked and people wanted to watch him drive a cool car around Hawaii. Like, it's bringing it back if you don't have the star that people are going to love. What's the effing point? Like, why? Just find cool people and put them in stuff. That's how you got Magnum P.I. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, that's why, even though I have no intention of watching it and it wasn't on the list, I at least understand the new show where Nathan Fillion is like a rookie cop at his age.
Yeah, it's like, let's put Nathan Fillion in a weird situation and see what happens.
Exactly. Okay, fine. At least I know if I did happen to bump into that show at some point, I'm laughing at least 5 or 10 times because Nathan Fillion's great.
Yeah.
So like, but giving me some dude who might go on to be a fine actor. I don't know. I've seen him once or twice before. It's not that he's terrible. It's just giving me some dude as a show I used to like is like, seriously, you got nothing new? It's frustrating. All right, let me give you the other two that were on my list, which I I picked not unlike the way we both picked Cool Kids. They're both comedies. They're both the short versions. One is called Single Parents, and that one I did watch a few minutes of. That is on ABC.
It's the one with Taron Killam.
Killam, I think. Killam? But yeah. The guy from SNL, and also Leighton Meester, one of my personal favorites, as well as Brad Garrett. It's funny and not too obnoxious after 5 or 10 minutes of it. So I kept that on the list.
This is one where, like, logline, I'm with you. Having seen a few ads for that show, I'm out.
Okay. And then the other one is Happy Together, which is the Damon Wayans Jr. And again, with that, it's just like, all right.
I like Damon Wayans Jr.
I like Damon Wayans Jr. The creator is Tim McAuliffe, and Ben Winston, who are Tim McAuliffe worked on The Office, and then they both worked together on Late Night, the Late Late Show with Corden.
Yeah.
So, like, I figure funny people created it, and a funny guy is the lead, and the premise is absurd, but you know, it might work.
Yeah, that's reasonable to me.
But it is CBS, which is not.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. When I was doing this, I just sort of ruled out all CBS sitcoms just on track record.
So why don't we just do the intersection, Cool Kids and Manifest?
I'm good with that. I was gonna say, if you want to substitute Happy Together for Cool Kids, I would live with that for sure.
I don't think there's any reason to. If there were two shows that we agreed were probably the best chance of finding something good on network television, let's just watch those two shows.
Yeah. All right. I'm good with that.
Okay, so we might need to do split them up and do single parents this week and manifest the week after or something if we're going to watch two episodes of each.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Which one do you want to do first?
Let's do the comedy first.
Okay, we'll do the comedy first. I like that. We're just sort of baby steps. Yeah, also, I'm traveling this week, so it's going to be a hard time for me to
find a ton of 48 minutes of television instead of an hour and 20.
Sounds good. All right, let's jump into one of the things on network TV that we actually do fully endorse. Maybe the only thing at this point, and that's The Good Place, which is back for more.
Yeah,
apps.
If you count like FX or anything, yeah.
FX is not network TV to me. That's
cable. So I think Good Place is the only network show we're behind at the moment.
Yeah, that I can think of at least. It's still good.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you, I'm behind The Voice, but that's a whole separate issue.
Yeah, reality aside, because as you know,
you watch The Bachelor.
I watch The Bachelor, yeah.
And we're all worse off for it.
I'm not, you know, other than you, you're the only person I tell should watch The Bachelor. That's pretty. I wouldn't recommend other people necessarily watch it. I just
guess
enjoy
that's cool.
Talking to people about it.
Thank you. I mean, I don't. Okay.
Whatever.
So,
Love Island. I'm not taking crap from you.
The Good Place. Here's what it fundamentally for me. The Good Place has done and continues to do a really cool thing, and my spoiler alert for the first two seasons, if you're not caught up. And the thing that I'm talking about is, the first season, they're in the alleged good place, and they don't know exactly what's going on for most of it. End of the season, they realize, oh, hell, we've been in the hell place the whole time. And second season is about what happens when they know they're in the bad place, masquerading as the good place. Season two ends, and all of a sudden they're back on Earth, and now it's this new show. And what it's done super effectively, I feel, is maintained the assets, which are, you know, great writing, some funny sort of inside jokes they've developed, and this through line of sort of moral philosophy, unbelievably.
Yeah.
And also say the lovability of the characters and actors.
And their relationships. Like, you're invested in the relationships between them.
Exactly. And they've managed to maintain all of those excellent things as through lines, while essentially from a sort of broad philosophy and plot standpoint, creating a totally different show each of the three seasons. And look, we don't know a ton about how the third show is going to go compared to the first two, which I think we loved both of, but I'm so here for a show that creatively reinvents itself when we just had a conversation about how the rest of network TV is uninventively recreating stuff from 30 or 40 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, the degree of difficulty on the show is so high because they are serving up network television and in the sort of comfort food aspects that we talked about with some of this other stuff that's just like gruel. And yet at the same time, they are challenging themselves from like a writing a standpoint to do all of this sort of high concept stuff and then completely reinventing the show from season to season. Like,
I mean, just think about the fact that this really and truly is a show about, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Not postgraduate, but, college level moral philosophy. Like, it really is. That's not just the thing they said a few times. Like, there are relevant points about Kierkegaard made in almost every episode. It is, and to be able to somehow,
and by the
package
way,
that
it's 10 times more entertaining than we make it sound saying that.
Exactly. To package that with the spoonful of sugar that is Kristen Bell and Ted Danson and all the other wonderful, a lot of them UCB improv actors on this show, it's just You said it. It's an achievement.
Yeah, it is. And then watching Michael marvel at combination Pizza Hut and Taco Bell. You know
exactly.
What I mean?
Like it has every brow. It has eyebrow, midbrow, lowbrow. It's got something for everyone, and all of it is so well executed. And if all else fails, you've got Kristen Bell and Ted Danson, which is like having Batman and Superman, or you know, it's the Avengers of television actors.
Yeah, although I mean, a lot of the lesser known supporting cast,
they're great
equally
too.
Tremendous.
They're great too, but just like literally at the end of the day, if all else fails, you have Michael Jordan and Babe Ruth, like ready to go.
Yeah, it's in the same way. It's like if you're the Bulls and you have a possession that's going rough and there's 6 seconds on the shot clock,
yes.
You can just throw it to Jordan, and you know what
it's
I mean.
It's the Warriors, yeah. Right? You know, it's just like if Steph doesn't have a look, KD probably does.
Yeah, it's like, hey, Steph, sorry we set you up where you have to take this 35-footer, but you're probably making it anyway.
Yeah.
I am dying to know, did you wind up watching any more Forever?
Nope.
All right. I'm guessing that you eventually will get around to it, although there's the TV load is piling up, and I'm curious as to what you think about where that show winds up going.
You finished it?
I finished it last night. We can talk more about our overall feelings.
How long was it?
It's 8 episodes.
I can try to plow through it this week.
I'm just curious as to what you think of the show vis-a-vis being a Good Place ripoff, which I think was sort of one of the points you made coming in.
Yeah, I may have agreed that ripoff wasn't quite the right word, but whatever.
Well, we can get to that later in a Forever discussion and when you watch the show. But I am curious to see what your final take on that winds up being. Mr. In Between on FX.
So I have a weird thing here. I watched this on FX.com. On my computer, and because of the way it was laid out, I accidentally watched the second episode first.
Oh, okay. I've only watched the first episode, although I also watch it online.
Oh, okay. Well, you're better at that than me, then. Are you sure you watched the first episode?
I did. I watched it online on the DirecTV app, so it, you know, it had numbers. The episodes had numbers and stuff, so that happened.
Okay. Mine may have too. I may be the idiot here, but either way, what'd you think?
You know, look, it's piloty. the pilot is piloty, which I know is an observation I made about a couple of different shows at this point. But I like the world that it's set up. I think it's charming to sort of watch this guy jump back and forth between the worlds of hitmaning and being like a dad and a guy in Australia. I
when
like
you say piloty, what do you mean?
I just mean just it's sort of be- like the show's – a lot of the work that the show is doing is about setting up sort of premise and what it's going to be in episode one. You know what I mean? Which sort of takes away from an episode that's not trying to do that work and just sort of trying to be a story. You know what I mean? It's not a slight to say it's piloty.
No, I know it's not a slight, you know what I mean? I feel like it's piloty in a different way than we've meant that in the past.
All right, explain.
Well, I feel like usually when we say that, it's kind of what you were saying in that, but it's often piloty because it's reaching out to give us a lot of different characters and do some like broad world setup.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a lot of different characters on this show.
Well, this show, the way it was piloty was that it was just a ton of plot.
Yeah.
Just a ton. Like, more so, we don't know much about him other than, like, 6 different things he's doing and involved in. And, like, also 3 different other things that don't necessarily involve him. Like, it's just a lot. There's a lot of things going on. And I'm with you. Like, I'm here for this world. He's an oddly charming violent criminal.
Yeah, and the show doesn't work if he's not, though. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's critical to the whole enterprise, is that you have to sort of be charmed by him.
Well, and the lead, I believe, is the writer and creator, so obviously he knew what he was getting into. But I do think if this show works, it's because it's going to do a totally different thing than it's done, particularly in the first episode. I would say the second episode is already sort of a turn towards what I'm about to say, but what this show has to be is a deep character study of this guy and his immediate sort of chosen family.
Yeah.
I guess it's his brother, it seems like.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And could you tell what was wrong with his brother? Did he say muscular dystrophy?
I could not tell, but he may have said that. I may have missed that while I was
whatever it is
online. I'm a little less locked in, to be honest, when you're watching online, you know?
That, and also, I think I would need subtitles to fully understand him, because in addition to a thick Australian accent, whatever malady he has seems to be affecting his speech. So,
yeah, that's fair.
I think it's, you know, if this show works, it's because it's a character study of the lead, his daughter, and his brother.
Yeah. Cool to see Dewey Crowe from Justified popping up.
Yeah,
on the show too.
Definitely.
Enjoyed that. Like that guy.
Is he Australian?
He is Australian, yeah. This show was apparently supposed to be the launch of FX Australia, which then they subsequently decided to kill. but
well,
they kept the show.
What,
there you go.
For a pilot, like I said, there's so much plot in it that I don't know. I'm into it. I'm into it, but I just think if it's a good show, it's going to be very different from what it is at the start.
Yeah, that's possible. And it does feel like it's a lot. It's a lot. You know, you got to be ready to jump into this show. But
yeah, like immediately six different things are happening.
Yeah, it feels like it could be rewarding.
Yes.
As FX shows usually are, man. The batting average is high.
Yeah, that's part of this is like I really just trust FX pretty completely.
Yeah, they know how to make television. Yeah. Speaking of people who know how to make things, there was a Lil Wayne record that dropped this week.
Yeah.
Lil Wayne's still Lil Wayne.
Yeah. But didn't you feel like this suffered pretty mightily from the thing we talked about with sort of each of the last couple of hip hop albums we've reviewed, if you will, which is it's just there's way too much of it. It's sprawling.
There's way too much of it. Yeah.
Like 100%. There are some moments that are lit, as the kids would say. But like the Carter 3 is 16 tracks and this is 23. And 16 would have been more than enough.
Yeah. How many were intros? Though and stuff.
Really, just the first track is a full.
Oh, I feel like
because all the other little interludes are part of actual tracks.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's one of those things where you know where you're listening on Spotify, you don't really see the track marks click. Yeah, you know what I mean?
It's like his mom and stuff are talking a lot, but
his mom's Louisiana accent is delightful, by the way.
It is, and I don't mind those things actually. It listens fine, other than. By the time it's over, you're like, bro. Oh,
yeah, it's 23 awesome. Tracks?
23 tracks.
That's it. You're right. It's too many tracks.
It's sorry. It's way too many tracks. Yeah. It's not just a couple. Yeah. It's and I like Lil Wayne, and I broadly speaking, I think I like this album. There are a few tracks. I mean, Uproar. The Swiss Beats beat is a banger, and it sounds like vintage Lil Wayne. The track Can't Be Broken, I'm a fan. I will say this. Don't invite Kendrick to be on your record.
Unless you're U2. and you're just trying to, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you're trying, and you're right. If the goal is to
just try to
get fans you've never had before,
yeah, or just stand next to the cool thing that's happening. Right. Imagine Dragons pulled that move with Kendrick.
then in fact, you know what? If you're not a rapper,
yeah, you can invite Kendrick.
By all means, invite Kendrick. If you're a rapper, he doesn't care, and he's gonna make you look bad.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, he does not. He DGAF, and he's going to make you look bad.
Yeah.
And okay. And in addition to being seven tracks longer, it's 11 minutes longer than the Carter 3. And I only make this point because the Carter 3 is pretty. Like, there's not a lot of tracks you skip when you listen to that. It's a pretty phenomenal album. And I wasn't expecting that from this. But like I said, there are not 16 hot tracks on here. And there are 23 tracks.
No.
If this was a 10-song album with the six really good songs I think there maybe are here, I think I'd feel a lot better about it. There's an Ashanti feature that I like a lot. There's a Snoop Dogg feature that's pretty cool. And Lil Wayne has his moments where you're like, yes, this is why this guy was the biggest rapper in the world for a couple of years.
Yep. But and it is pretty badass when you can get, like, the Obama talking about you intro on your song. You know what I mean?
That's sick. And that, you know, he's not Michael Jordan, but he was legitimately the guy for a minute there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a reason he was in the intro. He's talking about how kids don't want to, you know, not every kid can be LeBron James or Lil Wayne. And, like, that made sense at the time, right?
Yep.
So, and God bless him, because I, you know, I didn't know Fashani was dead. So,
true story. Yeah. Ja Rule, do your job. Get Ashanti.
Look, it's nice to see her again. And I sort of feel a lot about this. Like, it's nice to see Lil Wayne just being Lil Wayne. I agree 100% that there's too many songs on this record. And, the chances of me listening to it start to finish again are slim to none, but I enjoyed hanging out with it for a while.
Yes, and I'll throw a couple tracks on my, you know, mixtapes or playlists or what have you, but yeah, I'll never again listen to it front to back, whereas even now every so often I'll listen to the Carter 3 front to back.
Yeah. I think it's been a while since I checked in with the Carter 3, but maybe I should do that.
I recommend it, man. It really, there's some stuff on there where you, cause obviously we all remember A Millie and we all remember like La La or Let the Beat Build, but then you throw it on and you're like, oh man, Mr. Carter is a really good song. Like all of a sudden, like You Ain't Got Nothing. There's a lot of stuff on here. We all remember Got Money, but Comfortable is kind of dope.
Yeah. All right, I gotta get going soon, and we get still gonna talk about the end of Insecure. So
I forgot because we did most of it pre-pod. Yeah. Our production meeting was just a rough draft of our Insecure conversation.
Yeah, and it was tight. Sorry you missed out on it. Because now we're just gonna be like, well, remember when we said this? I think the reaction that that I had and Kolsky that your girlfriend had was like, "Are we sure that's the end of the season? Are there not more?"
Right. And I was like, "No, I'm sure, but I understand why you asked the question."
It wasn't a bad episode at all. I'd rather enjoyed it, but it didn't.
It was just
feel
it was like
a season
fifth episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing ended or started, which is kind of what you imagine will happen in finales, either ending things or starting them so as to tease you forward to the next season.
Yeah, like what was the resolution of Issa's arc and all this sort of turmoil that she was going through and trying to figure out? I mean, I guess
she
did unpack her apartment.
She unpacked her apartment. Like, The takeaway seems to be she's 30 now, which means she unpacks her apartment. But she still – we don't know where she stands with the dude.
Still driving a Lyft as far as I can tell.
We don't know where she stands with employment in terms of what she's doing regularly. We don't know where she stands with the block party, although that seems to be on the the upswing with her new friend.
For momentarily, though, it feels like.
But that's the very end, yeah, and it's just we don't – it's hard to tell how sincere that is, and it's hard to tell what is next for any of the characters, actually. That it almost seemed deliberately everyone's in limbo in like a – I don't want to say an uninteresting way, but in an undramatic way.
Yeah, it's like they took the episode and just sprayed a big question mark on it at the end, you know what I mean?
Or almost like a little question mark.
Or is it?
But it's not like it changed my opinion on the show overall, or it makes me want to watch the next season, which I assume is happening less. It just, if you were looking for like any sort of flash or pomp and circumstance with your season finale, you absolutely did not get it.
Yeah. Although I'm dying to know what happens with Quantrell.
I gotta say, that character, whose name I'm blanking on right now.
Me too. She's great, though.
Oh, my God. That's so bad. Kelly.
Every time she's in it, you're like, yes.
Kelly is one of the best characters on television. She is so funny. And it's one note.
Yeah. And she gets to just chew scenery. But
she's one note like Chris Davis is one note. Like, every year, 247
and dingers.
And 45 and mad dingers, son. And she's just there. No depth to her character, really. They did a little of that this year with her getting offended by the wedding thing, but not really.
Yep.
Really, she's just a lady who makes hilarious, dirty jokes and is raunchy as hell.
And DGAF.
And dingers.
Yep.
She dingers. Opposite field dingers, pull dingers, straightaway center field dingers. She's excellent.
Mm-hmm. Delightful. and look, the show, again, it's a delightful place to hang, and it occasionally is non-traditionally structured, so I'm not going to ding it a ton for not really cliffhanging things at the end.
Right. I mean, it's fair to ask why bother with that nonsense. I had this conversation actually with my girlfriend last night relative to the concept of scenes from next week. I hate scenes from next week because my argument is if I'm finishing the show, you got me. Yep. I'm watching next week. I don't want you to spoil it for me.
Well, you know, a lot of our shows, I think, you know, The Deuce is really doing this now, and Better Call Saul kind of takes the tack that it's the Mad Men pioneered this of the, yeah, here's scenes for next week and we're going to make them as vague and as short as we possibly can.
Yeah, because I guess like it's a thing you have to do because it's like the in the zeitgeist or whatever. But
and they want something to keep you around while the credits play and into the next show.
I guess, but I find it annoying. Yeah. I say no more.
Yeah. It's also, a tactic from a non-DVR world.
GTFO scenes from next week.
Although I still watch them when they come on because I'm like, all right, there's a little bit, a little more show. It's like,
yeah. That's the problem is it's hard to turn it off.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like literally hard to turn it off from a, you can't get to the remote in time.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it's just easier than getting the remote.
Yeah, but also it's like it is. It's like a little more show, but also every time I'm like, man, I didn't want to know that about next week.
Yeah. On that note, if we failed on our short pod, I legit gotta go. So
okay, wait, homework. I'll watch Forever. We'll watch two episodes of The Cool Kids. Also exciting. We've got the return on Netflix of a cartoon we both enjoyed, a rare treat.
I was hoping you were going to say Big Mouth.
Back.
Yeah.
Big Mouth is back. And I believe that, The Walking Dead, I think you checked out. Am I right?
Yeah. I was just going to say, I was saving this, I guess, for whenever we talk about Better Call Saul next, but I was watching Saul last night and watching commercials or promos or whatever for the new season of Walking Dead makes me realize just how much of a better executed show Saul is. Like,
oh, yeah.
when you watch these like tremendous acting scenes and then you get Andrew Lincoln, We're so close to building a better life.
Carl!
You know, like, you're
Carl!
Just like, yeah, there's no chance I'm coming back to The Walking Dead. I'm gone.
All right, well, we won't talk about that then. I don't think anyone's confused about what that is as it begins its ninth season. I do think we will, as you mentioned it, be talking about Better Call Saul this next week, though, because both it and Lodge 49 have their finales, and I would like to revisit both of them.
Oh, man, I got off that Lodge 49 train.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, it's a lot of catching up to do.
Oh, I'm bummed because I am really enjoying it.
All right, can we table that?
I am one or two episodes behind, but I would like to revisit it, so maybe we push that one.
Yeah, I'll try to catch up, but that's like I stopped after like three or four, so I got a ways to go.
Okay, I got to tell you, it remains weird and a little bit irascible, for lack of a better term, but it's just so fun and charming that I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I just it's one of those things where I'm like, it's not this bad. It just feels like it's not my show. You know what
okay.
I mean?
But all right, well, I can't let's see what happens. I would like you to get through the season.
And I would also just throw out there that I know you hate cartoons, but the new season of BoJack is awesome. Just saying.
You say that every year, and I don't hate cartoons. I just don't get into them.
Yeah, I know. All right.
All right. I'm Better Call Saul, though, you do that. Want to do, correct?
I will do Saul.
I'll watch forever, and we got Single Parents and Big Mouth, and that sounds like more than enough.
That is more than enough, and maybe I'll have some stories from seeing bands in Austin.
All right, get back to work. Stop neglecting your responsibilities. Bye.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.